So I'm now, instead of Antonio, I'm Barbara now. So we were actually thinking of getting me a Marge Simpson wig for this, but we thought that might be a little over the top.
You don't really look how I expected, Barbara.
Yes, I drank a lot last night.
So let's start with talking about your background in terms of the way that the schools are going to look at it.
Okay.
So schools are interested in accepting candidates who can excel academically mm-hmm. in the program, who have an interesting career path, not only, you know, kind of where they've been, but where they're going next, and who are going to contribute to the MBA community when it comes to kind of getting involved in clubs and campus events.
Okay.
So let's look at your profile in kind of those three areas, starting with academics.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit. I mean, we've got, you know, on the board here, we can see that, you know, you went to Wesleyan and you studied history and you had
yep.
a 3.2.
Yeah.
Any idea on your class rank?
Class rank sort of within department or?
No,
across
ideally
everybody.
Across everyone.
Ooh, I guess that includes some people who were in tougher majors than I took at that particular school. Mm-hmm. Nothing against anyone from Wesleyan history. This was just made up. I was sort of middle, I would say 60th percentile. How about that?
Okay. So I guess, I mean, as far as your academics are concerned, as you may know, a 3.2 is sort of on the lower end
yeah.
of the average GPA at the
yeah.
top MBA programs in terms of accepted students.
Can I just add 0.3 to that? Make it a 3.5?
No.
Okay.
You know, and in fact, you're going to need an extra digit.
Most
of the schools ask for, you know, 3.2
something.
Yeah,
okay.
So,
okay.
But in any event, I think your GPA it's a little on the low side, although I will say, you know, Wesleyan's a good school.
Yeah.
And
it
you
is.
Do get points for that. So
yeah.
In fact, you know, sometimes schools will actually make comparisons in the sense that, you know, oh, this person has a 3.5 from Yale, this person has a 3.8 from Central Utah State University
mm-hmm.
vocation, whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll actually, you know, keep that in mind.
Okay.
So
okay.
I think I'm not actually that concerned about your GPA.
Okay.
It's a little low. There is this aspect of the fact that you studied history, which on the one hand is going to be really intriguing, right?
Right.
And there aren't that many history majors applying to business school.
Yeah. Well, I loved it. I mean, I really liked it.
And so there's you get this sort of yeah, it's kind of an added, oh, this person's unique or non-traditional because you didn't study business administration or engineering as
right.
an undergraduate. But then you're going to strike panic in the hearts of the admissions team because they're going to wonder how good you are at math. And so tell me a little bit about your GMAT score, 670, huh? And what do those arrows mean with the math?
Those arrows mean, I think, I'm not really good at math, but two...
Greater than...
Two less thans.
What was
yeah,
your
it means really lower.
So what was your percentile on the math portion?
Can
of
I tell you my percentile on the verbal first?
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
It was 97%. I mean,
excellent.
I rocked the verbal.
And you
no
know, they've
verbal
actually,
question, I got it
They've
wrong.
Actually found that the verbal percentile is a more accurate predictor of your first year performance in business school than the math.
Wow,
but the
well,
schools,
that's great.
But the schools don't listen to that. So
oh, okay.
So what was the math percentile?
Less than 97. It
okay.
was in the high 50s.
High 50s. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What about quantitative coursework at school? I mean, you went to Wesleyan and presumably
yeah.
you had to take some things outside of history. Did you
yeah.
take any math or
I
econ?
I took one econ course.
And how'd you do?
I got a B.
Okay. So I think... You know, if looking at your profile from an academic standpoint, I think there's going to be some concern. I mean,
yeah.
the committee is going to sort of say, well, we don't have enough data from undergrad, you know, one course and a B. And then the GMAT, how many times have you taken the test?
Actually, that's my third time. And I'm terrible at standardized tests. And I was amazed to get a 670. Like
okay.
that... I sort of went to the upper end of, I guess, what they call the bell curve
okay.
by accident. So I absolutely lucked out. I got a 550, then a 610, and then 670. A 670 because I rocked
okay.
the verbal. And
now, did you work with Chris Ryan at Manhattan GMAT to get that 670?
No. No, I bought a Kaplan 800 book.
Okay.
Don't do that.
Okay, so... I think what we have here is it's clear to me that you probably don't want to retake the GMAT again.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound
like
you want to.
No,
I
mean,
something you enjoy doing.
Not something I can't even contemplate going back into the GMAT.
So let's assume you have maxed out your potential on the GMAT and that you're just a bad standardized test taker and that maybe you are good in math. You know, you just have this one data point from undergrad.
Yeah.
How could we – I mean, you really need to show the schools though. I mean, because they don't want to admit someone who's at risk of dropping out after the first semester.
Right.
And this kind of thing happens. I mean, when I was working in Wharton as an admissions officer – we'd literally get a list at the end of the first semester of the students who had dropped off, you know, who had poor performance in their quant courses. And what was really crazy is the academic services office would come to us and say, can we take a look at those files and see why you admitted those people?
Wow.
And then I'd have to sort of say, yeah, we knew that this might be a problem, but we liked the person and we thought, you know, and they'd say, well, don't do that again. You know, so you need to convince them that you're capable. And so maybe one thing you could do is actually take a class or two. I mean, here we are in New York. You could go down to NYU School of Continuing Ed and take statistics or accounting. I'm sure these sound exciting to you. But, I mean, it would be really helpful. You could show them, kind of give them a current view of your kind of classroom ability today in a quantitative subject. And then you could make that argument in your optional essay. Standardized tests aren't for me, but look, I just got an A in my stats class at NYU. I know what I'm getting into with business school, and I want to be ready. So that's my main concern around your academics.
Okay.
Let's talk about your career background. What is it that you do? I mean, you have your PR.
Yeah, I work for basically the second biggest PR firm here in New York, and I work in the consumer health group, and so we do campaigns with large consumer brands, also pharma, doing direct to consumer, and we do campaigns, and yeah, I love it. I'm absolutely in love with this stuff, and so
using your liberal arts kind of background,
marketing. And sort of the way in which a campaign comes together is really cool. I'm really a team person. I love working with lots of people sort of towards a deadline or towards a project.
And what is it that you want to do? Let's imagine that, you know, you go to your business school of choice and you graduate. What's that dream job within reason? You know, what would you like to do after school?
I know that already. I want to do brand management. In fact, we already work with some of the best brands in consumer health. Now I want to continue doing that, but on the client side.
Okay.
And yeah.
So you've had exposure to some of these companies and you want to just cross over that line and see it from the other side.
Yep.
Okay. That sounds great. I mean, that's a feasible career goal. It sounds like you've given this some thought. And the schools, I mean, there's a reason business schools want folks who have kind of clear career goals and a feasible path.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they want to make sure they can actually get you a job when you graduate.
Right.
They are graded on that in all of these rankings. So, you know, their ability to kind of place graduates and how many offers you got, things like that. So that's a positive. Is there any other component to this? I mean, is there another interest in terms of, you know, a certain type of company or a region?
Oh, right. I see. Well, I am interested to continue in consumer health. I could also see going certain other kinds of brands, but like Coke or something like that. But P&G. Actually, that was one of our campaigns. We did a campaign in Mexico, and I minored in Spanish. And so and have always been really interested. I mean, part of my it was Spanish, and so I took a lot of courses in Latin American history. I even spent a semester in Mexico, so I was really involved in that campaign at Ritter Finn. So,
and so are you? I mean, would you consider working for Procter & Gamble, you know, in that market specifically?
Oh yeah,
like
absolutely.
Latin America.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Vice President of Marketing, Latin America, or something.
Yeah, or like a rotation or something like that. Spend a couple years down there or something. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think that could be a really interesting angle to your candidacy. I mean, just because now you're no longer PR person to, you know, kind of brand management, but there's this added angle, you know, around consumer health or, in addition, the sort of language focus. Are you pretty fluent?
Yeah. I mean, as fluent as you can get at the end of a semester in Mexico City when you're sampling a lot of mezcal and tequila. And
okay.
Like
So I think that could be a really great angle to pursue. And actually, along those lines, let's talk a little bit about your school selection. I mean, we'll get to extracurriculars, but I'm curious about school selection because I noticed that, you know, you mentioned here Kellogg HBS in Michigan.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, how did you, I mean, Kellogg, you're interested in brand management.
Yeah, brand management. So that made sense because they're like number one all the time in brand.
That is a strength that mm-hmm. they have, yes. Mm-hmm. What about the other two here?
HBS, well, because they're Harvard and my uncle went there.
Oh, and, okay, good.
And Michigan, because I like the Midwest. I could see living there for a couple of years and maybe settling in sort of Chicago-ish area.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a number of consumer packaged goods companies based out of the Midwest,
right.
So there is that potential angle. I guess, I mean, something tells me, though, that in terms of your career goals, you may want to actually explore further some of these schools because mm-hmm. it's not only marketing and brand management, but now there might be this international angle, you know, in terms of,
right.
you know, what's their strength when it comes to placing people in jobs internationally, or what's their strength if they have sort of language offerings? I mean, you may if you drank a lot in Mexico City and you didn't you just minored in Spanish, you might need to actually brush up on that.
So
you might look at a program that has that sort of offering. I mean, one school that's coming to mind is the sort of dual degree option. So for example, Wharton has a program called Lauder, where you could pursue Spanish as your language,
mm-hmm.
And it sort of runs in parallel with the MBA curriculum, and they sort of specialize in getting people jobs in the markets that they're targeting. Mm-hmm. So I just as an idea, because sometimes, you know, basing your school selection on sort of where you grew up or brand, you know, kind of recognition or prestige may mm-hmm. not be the only way to go. I mean, So you may want to look into the Wharton Lauder program.
Okay.
There are also, I mean, Cornell, the Johnson School, has a very interesting sort of brand management focus. So there may be other programs out there for you to investigate. And, you know, depending on how those classes go at NYU, you may or may not be sort of Harvard material, right? I mean, if you really are falling short on the quant side, some of these top programs may be nervous. So that's going to be important. One last thing is, what else do you do? I mean, so you obviously go to work and you know, you went to Wesleyan, but what do you do with your spare time?
Like community service, you mean?
I mean, that could be one thing. That
I don't do any community service.
No. Okay. So do you just come
just
home and watch, you know, Sopranos reruns? I mean, what do you do with your spare time?
The Sopranos are good, but, something I'm into is foreign film. And I didn't just drink in Mexico City. I went and saw a lot of foreign film there. And really got into it in college. And I'm sort of the ringleader of a group of friends and extended friends that we go. It's like a Sunday night movie club. And we go to see the weird movies that no one else sees. Mm-hmm. And we like rent a house at Sundance and see all the movies that never get released anywhere else. And we did something for Tribeca last year too. But I mean, like, that's just for fun.
But I mean, so you haven't thought of introducing that into your candidacy as you apply to business school in some way?
I figured I would actually have to sort of drop that and put some community service on.
Okay. So, I mean, again, remember that the schools are just looking for students who are going to be active contributors to campus life. And while that could involve community service, it could also involve launching an independent film club at Kellogg that, you know, gets together your classmates and goes out to see movies. I mean, there's a lot of components to life on an MBA campus. And, you know, there's another element here, too, which is the schools are looking for people who are well-rounded. They have this belief that in order to be a true leader and kind of, you know, managers of tomorrow, that you should have multiple interests. You know, you have to be the sort of Renaissance woman. And so this element of your profile could actually be an asset in that it shows, kind of intellectual drive and also your organizing. I mean, it sounds like it's informal, but I'm hearing there's a club that meets regularly. You're organizing.
I mean,
trips
we don't have
Sundance.
Like members or something, but yeah, like it's, but, I'm the person who's always doing the work.
I mean, it sounds like it's you know, next best thing to a formal club, and you should consider introducing that into your profile.
Cool.
So okay. I think if you can address this issue with the quant weakness, you'll actually be a very strong candidate. And the only other thing I want to say is that you've probably noticed from looking around that even the very top MBA programs who have the pick of the litter in terms of candidates only manage to get about 35% women. And so as a woman in the pool, you are dramatically underrepresented. And so if you can jump through this hoop on the quantitative side, I think you'd be very attractive to all of these schools.
Cool. Thank you.
So...
We'll be brief on this. Basically the idea with this case was you have a candidate who has a critical weakness. And I think sometimes people don't recognize that the schools really are looking for you to be at a certain level when it comes to your math skills or even on the verbal side. So the key with Barbara was getting her to address this weakness, because otherwise I think what we found from the discussion is that there is kind of an interesting profile behind, behind the numbers. And then the other thing was, just this sort of angle of speaking Spanish and wanting to work in an international market, that we kind of teased out as we spoke. And that could be a real differentiator. It also might, kind of shift school selection. And that's why we talked about Wharton Lauder, because of the language component that one could pursue there. And then there's this common theme that is kind of emerging, which is you don't have to be out there saving the world to prove that you're kind of active or interesting. And so, Barbara's setting up, has run this sort of club that goes to see the movies, and there's an interest there. And there's actually a level of organization and leadership that's going on. And so to the extent that she could formalize that in her application essays and then map it onto future involvement at a given MBA program, she'll really be in kind of the driver's seat. So that's the summary on Barbara.
Thank you, Graham. And now we have Chioma.